Howdy, and welcome to The Stoop. This is Cutter Gonzalez, your host, and this is our last episode of The Stoop ever. Just kidding. But it is the last one for 2025. Over this first year, y'all listened along as we experimented with this idea of a pro housing podcast and experimented with the technical difficulties of having me as host and producer, plus the audio difficulties in running a podcast out of an apartment in a high-traffic, fast-growing region of Austin. It's been an absolute ride. We've heard from folks coast to coast, everywhere in between, and well beyond. Their wisdom has changed the way I work, and I hope these brief episodes have done likewise for you and will continue to do so. To honor the generosity of our guests and reflect back on what they shared, I compiled a list of a few personal highlights from the season. Here were some of my favorite moments. Two of our guests, in separate episodes, taught us that, contrary to what you might expect, there really are no NIMBYs, or at least we should advocate as if there weren't any. The first was Graham Downey from Anchorage, Alaska, and here's what he said.
You know, something I think that Welcoming Neighbors Network preaches, and I think is completely true, is the goal is not to convince the diehard enemies. And I think one evolution of my thinking about that is maybe this is just true in Anchorage. Maybe it's not true in other places, but there actually are no diehard enemies. I think this sort of us versus them thinking is actually tends to produce the conflict that we're so anxious about. And that getting back to shared values and that sort of clear problem identification can really mitigate the amount of pushback and resistance that happens.
I was so surprised when Carly Booz from Columbus, Ohio, later shared almost the exact same insight. From Carly.
And I'm with you. I am transparent that I do come with a bias. Our bias is that every person should have a home that is both safe and affordable.
Yeah, amen.
After that, I don't care. I don't. You tell me what works and let's do that.
I agree. That's the right up front, right? Like, if somebody told me tomorrow that increasing housing supply and had evidence that it was the absolute wrong thing, I would change my mind. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and gladly, with a smile, right? All right, on to the next one.
Right, because the goal is not the policy. It's the things the policy creates or allows to be created in the end. Yeah.
And that's why I don't tend to buy into this NIMBY versus YIMBY dichotomy.
Sure.
Because I don't ever go to a place where someone's like, nope, I'd like to see the community burn. I'm just keep it all down with me.
Yeah.
Like, we're all out here to try and do what's right. We got to find a way to collaborate. And I just think most of the time we can.
Yeah. No, and you're not alone in that. I had Graham Downey from Alaska, from Anchorage, Alaska, on this podcast late last year. And Graham said that he didn't believe there were NIMBYs. And I shared that with the network. And you know, with those of us who are in the movement, like, it can be a useful thing to have an opposition that seems like an entity unto itself over there and have a label like NIMBY. But I think what Graham said and what you're saying are jarring to the status quo of advocacy work in a really good way to remind us that these are people who care equally and that they are possible of change, of changing their minds, of coming into the fold, and also us transforming our work in response to them and the things they're seeing. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite people in the entire world is Susan Bean from Asheville, North Carolina. She operates from strong ground, allowing her to navigate some intense debates over how to build a stronger Asheville. She stands her ground because she earned that ground. And she reminds us that wins and losses are not single events. In fact, we have to replace that very dichotomy with a deeper understanding of just how complex our campaigns really are and see them as relationships rather than battles.
One thing that someone was saying recently that I thought was really interesting, because like I was really struck by how winning didn't feel as good as I thought it would feel or wanted it to feel. And I was having coffee with a friend of mine recently, or well, no, let's be honest, chocolate cake. So I was like, listen, we won, I want chocolate cake. This guy's been doing housing advocacy in Nashville for a long time and has been really helpful to me in understanding complexities and nuance and the issue and the people involved and whatnot. Anyway, he was talking about like the framing of everything as a fight, you know, that these campaigns and advocacy, it's like you do need to call things wins. There's importance to that in sort of building a movement and like gaining, making advances as a movement. And yet the framing of everything as being a battle and like you either win or you lose, and you have to sort of define it as one or the other, when like the reality is it's so much more complex, and there were compromises, and there was stuff that didn't feel good, and there was stuff that like should have been done way better. And it's hard to come out of that and just like put on a big smiley face and call it a win. But you also want to be like, but I did work really hard for this, and I think it was the best of the options. But I don't know. There's so many other options. There's like infinite options, right? So like maybe it wasn't. There's just like so much doubt and so many swirling emotions in there. But I just appreciated that the prospect for like for myself kind of continuing in this work of thinking of it as less of a sort of battleground with each thing being either a win or a loss, like trying to sort of hold in my head, I don't know, the richness of it, the complexity of it, that's like it's kind of gonna be both, you know. And so that, I think, thinking of it in that way allowed me a little more room and grace for like all the swirling emotions that I was feeling in the aftermath. And I think that that will be helpful for me going forward too. It's like, even though that, you know, there's good reasons to frame it as a fight and to call it a win and or even a loss sometimes, and there's reasons to do that too. But the reality is that it's not that clean. It's not that simple. And I think I knew that, but thinking about it in the aftermath of a vote, because, you know, there is a very specific, like it either went one way or it went the other way, because people had to say yes or no, and like it seems so clear cut. I don't know. I appreciated thinking of it differently, in that context.
Yeah, that's big. That's big.
Related to Susan's insight, we often have strange bedfellows coalitions that span the diverse ideological positions of our communities. In Arizona, Jake Hinman has helped demonstrate why Republicans should lead on housing. His message is about the strength of coalition and how unity builds success.
To me, so much of this is just practical. It's sort of this obvious need. You know, all we're trying to do is build more housing, and I don't view that policy, you know, as extreme or out, you know, thinking outside of the box. And I know that wasn't the point of what you were saying or using the terminology, but I think, you know, sometimes other people view, if you use the term activist, they suddenly think, oh, well. Wow, I don't, you know, it's I'm either on one side or the other. You know, and what we were doing, and I think what created a lot of success here in Arizona, and I think this probably translates to any sort of purple states or any, you know, states with divided government, is really the coalition building and bridging the gaps and creating unity, where we didn't necessarily have one side as quote activists and, you know, going up against, you know, the other side, so to speak. I mean, there was, of course, we, you know, it was us and many other groups versus the League of Cities and Towns and, you know, of course, all the cities that didn't want this policy. But I think the success here in Arizona was all about uniting folks and bringing people together on both sides of the aisle, folks that don't traditionally agree with one another. All searching for this common goal of just building homes for people, which I don't think is an extreme idea. I think it's a very practical solution to a problem that we really are dealing with in Arizona. And just to define the issue for your viewers, Arizona, we're short roughly 270,000 units. You know, Arizona, where we once promoted housing affordability, we're no longer affordable. The homes, you know, a single family detached home sold for roughly $250,000 pre-pandemic. Now the average home in Maricopa County, which is our largest county, sells for roughly $460,000. So we're no longer affordable. We're probably only going to continue to worsen because our in-migration, folks from other states coming in, continues to increase. So we have a problem. And again, from my perspective, the solution is really simple. Just build more homes. But unfortunately, we have these legal barriers that prevent that.
Lastly, I want to go back to our very first ever episode. Our first guest was Dan Reed, one of the board members of the Welcoming Neighbors Network and an activist in the greater Washington region. Dan reminds us that our movement is often built informally with what they call fellow travelers.
Over the shockingly 20 years that I've apparently been doing this, I've had the privilege of being part of coalitions and seeing how exciting and powerful it is when many different groups sort of work together in lockstep to make something happen. I think maybe the best example I can say in Maryland is the Purple Line, which is a new light rail line that is under construction as we speak, 10 minutes from my house. That was it was a combination of labor, environmental, civic activists and business activists together pushing for this transformative project. At the same, in our work, locally and at the state level in Maryland, we have not done a lot of formal coalitions. They can occasionally be, sometimes they can be a little unwieldy, especially when you're sort of down to the wire and have, you have to move quickly. What I would say that we do is we have a lot of fellow traveler organizations, smart growth groups, environmental groups, community organizer groups. I work very closely with a group of interfaith organizations that bring people from many different houses of worship and different faiths. That is super engaged on housing issues now, right? I really enjoy working with our partners, and I like that we can each sort of do our own thing when the time calls for it. The flexibility is nice. That's not to say that I don't a coalition may not a formal coalition may not make sense in the future, because I definitely think that may come up. But we have found success with slightly more informal partnerships.
That's valid. That's valid. I love the term fellow travelers. I think that encapsulates it really well. I've been trying to think through these different kind of models of affecting change. And some of them are really tight coalitions, right? Like they have kind of a governing structure. They have key people with key, clearly defined roles. And then others are a little looser and a little more like what you're saying, like informal relationships, but all kind of keyed into the issue. And I think that can be obviously very powerful because y'all have made policy progress, which is great.
There's so much learned and so much more to learn. So what's next? For The Stoop, we'll begin production on season 2 after the winter holidays. We're taking a hard-earned break from the technical stuff of this podcast, but we are not taking a break from tracking big policy wins happening in communities across the United States. We've got a roster, and we will certainly be in touch very soon if you're on it. We're also thinking about having topic-specific rather than just campaign-specific episodes so that we can dive into questions like, how do we even message the housing issue? If people love cars, how do we ever convince them to reform parking mandates? How do I even begin to organize for change in my community? I can imagine deeply thoughtful conversations that purposely bring together Welcoming Neighbors Network member leaders and their partners, spanning communities that vary wildly. We'll also be getting this podcast on YouTube in the early part of 2026 and ensuring future episodes are uploaded there as they release. We want to make sure you can access these learnings wherever you are and on whichever platform you prefer. This is an exciting time for the pro-housing movement. And despite the immense challenges we're facing as a country at this moment, the solidarity of our advocates is an unending supply of hope. Even more because of how dark the current moment is, it is absolutely critical to find your community and dig deep to make lasting change where it's possible. Housing is one issue among many, And we want to make sure we are all helping y'all create more abundant and affordable communities, places of deep belonging, where advocacy on housing can strengthen us, develop solidarity, and build our resolve for a more just and equitable world overall. I'm signing off for now, but I'll talk to y'all real soon. As always, you can connect with the Welcoming Neighbors Network online at welcomingneighbors.us and on social media. We are at WNN Pro Housing on Instagram and at welcomingneighbors.us on Blue Sky. The Stoop is produced in-house at the Welcoming Neighbors Network by me, Cutter Gonzalez. The music for our show was created by my friend Nolan Hopkins. If you have ideas for our show, including special episodes, guests you'd like to hear from, or topics you'd like to cover, shoot me an email at cutter@welcomingneighbors.us or DM me on social media. My handle is at Cutter W. Gonzalez across all platforms. Thanks for joining us on The Stoop, and we'll see you in 2026.